Hour number three, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Labor Day morning. And as we do every Monday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Corey Curtis from News 2. Corey, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. This is otherwise known as the NFC North Power Hour.
Oh, yes, it is. The only place, I was telling Corey this yesterday, the only place where I could talk about one of my favorite subjects, the Chicago Bears. And as he brought up, we can fit some Lions talk in there, too.
You know, we need to find a Vikings person to complete this quartet.
We really do. We'll be on the search for some Vikings personnel somewhere.
We can bring in Audra Martin.
Maybe so. Audra. We can get Tatum Everett. Many choices.
That's right.
We can go get. No question about it. We could join this NFC North powwow. So, Corey, we finally made it. It is game week here in the NFL, game week for the Tennessee Titans. And we were talking about this earlier, beyond the obvious of winning the game and starting the season 1-0, how important is this Giants game, just from the standpoint, if you're the Titans, of taking care of business against a team that you should take care of business against?
Well, I think it's really important because the schedule is really brutal. I mean, they don't just play a first-place schedule. They play a first place in the AFC schedule. As I've said, their 17th game is the Green Bay Packers at Lambeau Field. That's not all 17th games are created equally, okay? So, you know, they've got to play the NFC East, which includes the Cowboys and the Eagles this year. I think they're playing the AFC West with the Chargers and the Raiders and the Chiefs. They've got a gauntlet to run through this year, and look, for every one of these that you lose against a team that you should take care of business against at home, you got to steal one. You got to steal one that you shouldn't win, and that of course is tough to do. And you know, Vrabel usually has his teams ready on long rest in long preparation. Last year's opener was crazy because it was really bad. So I expect them to be really ready for this one.
So Corey, obviously since we talked last time, things have changed pretty dramatically in terms of the pass rush, the outside linebacker situation. There are a few guys on this roster who would be bigger losses. I don't think you get to 10 before you get to Landry, and you may not get much past 5, but what's the impact in your mind, and does it change just your big picture thought on this team?
I think it's massive because he plays a lot of snaps. And, you know, when you talk about a natural pass rusher, I mean, this is a guy with a lot of bend, a guy with closing speed, a guy who can finish 12 sacks a year ago. And I think it's a huge loss. And, you know, do I think they can still win the AFC South without him? Yes. Do I think they can get to the Super Bowl without him? I think that's incredibly hard because, you know, you're talking about getting through Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. You know, you don't beat those guys with corners. You beat those guys by hitting them. I mean, that's just how you do it. And so when you're missing your guy who's arguably the best at it, that's a big loss. And I really wonder, you know, look, we all like Rashad Weaver. He had a nice preseason. He didn't have a knock-your-socks-off preseason. He had a nice preseason to where you thought, hey, we feel good about bringing him in for, you know, 30, 35%, 40% of the snaps in the game to give, you know, Landry and Bud Dupree some downtime. He's a nice big guy, set the edge, still have the quarterback. There's a big difference between that and replacing a guy with 12 sacks. A huge difference. And maybe he comes out and Carlos hauls it and gets 9 sacks this season and is just like the unsung hero of the football team. But I think that is not a fair expectation to put on him. He has to go out and play his best and do his job for sure. But, you know, sacks don't come that easily in this league. And, you know, I'm very interested to see how the first month of the season goes and if John Robinson gets aggressive in trying to bring somebody in for this season to fill that void.
So, Corey, with that in mind, there was already going to be pressure on Bud Dupree heading into this year with the money that he's being paid. How much more is there now? And based on what you've seen throughout camp in the preseason, how confident are you that Bud Dupree can rise to the occasion and be the player that the Titans need him to be this year?
Well, look, the last five games or so of last year and in the playoff game, Bud Dupree was healthy and really, really good. So that's the player I expect to see. What are the sack numbers for Bud Dupree? I don't know. I don't know. But I know Bud Dupree's a good football player, so I don't. The only thing I worry about Bud Dupree is being out there for 17 games. That's it, because if he's out there for 17 games, I expect him to turn in a quality season for the Titans. Whether Harold Landry is out there or not, I expect him to be the same player.
So, Corey, Aaron Brewer, Nicholas Petit-Frere, these are new starters in the area of the team that I think is the biggest question mark still.
Absolutely.
Of those two, let's say by mid-season, which spot do you think we'll be talking about more in terms of a problem, if at all?
Oh, wow. So you're asking me to predict someone's demise.
or success. Retro's bringing it this morning.
You know, I guess I would have to say right tackle, because I feel like we've seen Aaron Brewer do it. I mean, Aaron Brewer's played for this team, and when he's played, he's done reasonably well. And now we'll see. You know, the other thing is how much help are they willing to give Petit-Frere? Or is he on an island and is he by himself? Are they going to Ken Whisenhunt him, or are they going to Mike Mularkey him and give him help? I mean, that's kind of the question I've got out there, is how much is he on his own? How prepared is he to be on his own out there? So I think for me, and I like Petit-Frere, and I think long term he can be a guy that, you know, is a long term starter for the football team. But he's got to prove it. You know, he's got to prove it, and we'll see how much he's up for to start the season. So I would say that's a bigger question, you know, for them in that department. You know, for the long haul, you know, probably going to want a bigger body in there at left guard. But you know what? Maybe I'm wrong.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Corey, sticking with predictions, at what point this year do you think people around the league actually know who David Long Jr. is? Because I think he's going to be a pretty big force for the Titans this year.
Never. They're not. Look. No, I mean, look, they're not. I mean, most people are predicting the Titans to not even make the playoffs this year, right? I mean, this is a team with six straight winning seasons, back-to-back AFC South titles, number one seed in the AFC last year. Yes, they blamed out in round one. I'm keenly aware of that. But they're one of the best coached teams in the league. And they've got a personnel department which has made failures. Obviously, we've seen them. But they've also succeeded in being able to replace a lot of bodies and find people that fit what they do as a football team. And, you know, when you watch the national media, they're talking about Malik Willis supplanting Ryan Tannehill this season.
Yeah.
Those are the stories they're talking about. So that tells me something. They don't watch this football team. All they see are the highlights that come up on Twitter, all right? And, you know, for whatever reason, they're not as attractive as watching the Colts' completely mediocre receiving core and oozing about it. But that's what they do, all right? And so that's, you know, if you want David Long love, you're going to have to listen to your show or another show in Nashville, because nationally it's not going to happen unless he has like 8 interceptions or 10 sacks, you know, because they're, you know, fumble recoveries, tackles, being around the ball, that's not going to do it. Those are all things he does.
Yeah, that reminds me. I think you tweeted this, Robbie. Someone was like, so Malik Willis after the Arizona game just said something like, the job's not done, like he's still, you know, he's still working at me. And someone took that quote, was like, he's coming after Tannehill's job.
Florio at PFF. Yeah.
Yeah.
Florio
yeah.
did that? Oh, God.
No, it's been all over the place, you know that he's coming after QB1. You know what?
One day he is.
That's why they drafted him. Everybody gets drafted to be number one at their position, ultimately. I mean, that's what you want him to do. But, you know, it's just, you know, look, the kid, he was fun to watch this preseason. And it was great to see him grow, too. And it gave me a lot of optimism for him for the future, more optimism than I had than when he got here. But I also know he's got a lot to learn. But I'm excited about his capacity to learn. But, you know, that's not even a thought for me this season.
Right. Like we're moving on to people who are actually going to play, yeah, for the most part.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, being drafted to start and make a big deal, you know, Treylon Burks is going to be a huge point of emphasis early on. And you look at this receiving core, Corey. Look, I was of the mind that Racy McMath was going to have some kind of role. Some people don't necessarily agree with that. I think it's a significant loss to not have him there. I don't know if it affects Treylon Burks' situation, but what do you think we're going to see just on Sunday in terms of Treylon Burks, how often he's out there and what kind of situations he's in?
You know, it's something that we, you know, it's hard to say because we didn't see that much of him in the preseason, but I think when you read into certain things, okay, when you look at him putting him back, you know, to return punts in practice, you know, what does that tell you? It tells you they want to find ways to get the ball in his hands, even if it's going back there on special teams. Go to his time at Arkansas, where they lined him up at every spot in the formation, including in the backfield, okay, to get the football in his hands. And so I think we're going to be surprised at the frequency at which they try to get the football in his hands, because we haven't seen it to this point. But I think getting the football in his hands, in space in particular, is something that they are going to emphasize. And so that's going to be interesting to see just how much that is, how, I guess, forced, if that's what we want to call it, is. But I think that that's going to be a definite emphasis on their attack. And I think for people expecting him to, you know, catch 2.5 passes a game this season, I just think that there's going to be way more touches than that for him.
All right, Corey, last thing for you here. The Chicago Bears, 6-11 last year. FanDuel has their over-under win total at 5.5. You going over? You going under for the Bears?
You know, I'm going to tell you, I haven't looked at their schedule because I don't need to know that they're going to be bad. they have 6 undrafted free agents on the roster. They have a starting right guard who they could not trade at the deadline. I mean, they have Tajay Sharp on the receiving core, and they're excited about him.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not good, guys, and it's not supposed to be good. So, you know what? I'm excited to watch Justin Fields and Darnell Mooney this year. They're both on – I mean, Darnell Mooney and David Montgomery are both on my fantasy team.
There we go.
Oh, boy. Because I think – well, no, look, I think the Bears are going to stink, but I think both those guys are going to have good years.
I mean, Mooney had like 84 catches last year or something. Yeah.
Yeah, and Fields is only going to be better. So I think Mooney could have a really big year. You know, that five or six seems right. I don't think I could make a bet on that. But yeah, if I had to guess, I'd say like 5-12.
Corey Curtis, our guest here on Robbie and Rexrow, joins us every Monday morning at 8:00. Corey, great stuff, man. We've made it to the regular season. We'll talk to you next week.
We did. And, hey, congratulations, Robbie. I hear you're starting in the slot for the Packers.
Yep, I'm in shape now. I'm ready to go. Yep. Minnesota better watch out on Sunday. That's all I'm telling you.
You know, there are a lot of people who like Minnesota a lot this year.
I know.
So it'll be interesting. I think the NFC is a total grab bag.
I agree.
The Brady thing is, I think it's interesting because I think it's a problem, and I think the Packers' receiving core is a problem. So I think the NFC rep is going to be a surprise.
I think it's very much, very very well could be a surprise. Corey, great stuff, man. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, enjoy the season, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks, Corey Curtis from News 2, our guest here on Robbie and Rexrow. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. More of the Titans taking on the Giants this week coming up next. Robbie and Rexrow, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Corey Curtis for joining us in the last segment. Joe, what did you make of Corey's thoughts on Treylon Burks there? And maybe the usage maybe being a little higher than we thought it could be heading into this first game. Corey seems to think that maybe we'll be surprised by just how much he touches the ball coming up on Sunday against the Giants. What do you anticipate the role being for Treylon Burks?
Well, that'd be a good thing for the Titans if it's immediately they're able to get him involved. I mean, he's going to be involved. He's going to be on the field. I'm going to stick with the sort of prediction of Treylon Burks less than 50% snaps, which is, again, A.J. Brown, first month of his rookie year. That's where he was. And it's not like he was joining a loaded receiving corps. It was A.J. Brown joining Corey Davis and some other guys.
So, Tajae Sharpe.
There was some Tajae. Yeah. Bears future star, Tajae Sharpe.
Oh, yeah.
So, and still, even in that, he made a huge impact. He took that little pass from Mariota and burned up the field. And that's, to me, still, with Burks, what you're hoping is you can find some big plays from him. I'll be very interested. I mean, his snap count is a high interest stat on Sunday. I still think Woods and NWI get a lot more snaps than he does, and it'll be interesting to see how he compares to Kyle Phillips on that front. But the more he's out there, the more he gets involved, the better that is for this team moving forward. If they can get that confidence to start building right from week one, I think that would be a big deal.
I'm also interested to see whether or not Josh Gordon is a part of the active roster this week. Do you roll with Cody Hollister as your fifth receiver? Is Josh Gordon going to be elevated from the practice squad? You know, even if he is, I don't have high expectations for Josh Gordon coming into the game, but I am interested to see if he's actually going to be a part of the active roster coming up on Sunday against the Giants.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would be guessing no. I'm going to guess no on that. But obviously, if he is, then that means that he showed something. And if he is, like, I still think it's quite a stretch right now to think like Josh Gordon is going to be out there making plays for them.
But I think it's a big stretch.
But hey, you never know. I just think it's just four guys. Those four guys are going to get just about all the work. The plan is, I think, you know, as long as nobody gets banged up, those four guys are going to get the snaps.
Really interested also to see, Joe, what the game plan looks like from Todd Downing and Tim Kelly and company. We know, look, I don't know how well-equipped the Giants' defense is to handle it, but we know what their primary focus is going to be. It's going to be to try to slow down Derrick Henry as much as they can. Now, some teams can do it. Some teams have not been able to do it. But in the passing game, how do you take advantage of that if you're Todd Downing and this offense? Are there, you know, certain concepts that you like, or, you know, how much of a factor can play action be? And at wide receiver, whether that be Robert Woods or Nick Westbrook-Ikhina or Treylon Burks, or even at the tight end position with Austin Hooper or Chig Okonkwo, like, are there guys that throughout the game that can make some splash plays down the field? Really, really fascinating part of that this week, because that's going to be something that we wonder about all year. But in this game against the Giants, with the receiving core right now for the Titans being a little bit of an unknown, how do they plan that? How do they kind of map out what their passing game looks like? I'm interested to see that on Sunday.
Yeah, me too. It's just the stressing of the deep ball in camp was undeniable. I mean, I think that was clear. You know, look, in some cases, like Tannehill doesn't have to go deep on some of these plays. You know, some of them were 7-on-7, some of them were team, but it just felt like there was an emphasis based on what we saw. And I'm a big fan of making the other team's safeties think about things, especially when you have a guy like Derrick Henry. So I think, you know, a vertical passing game with what the Titans do, I think, is a great compliment, and they just haven't had much of it. And I think Racy McMath was going to be slash maybe still will be a guy who gets some shots his way and probably makes a few of those plays.
Well, how big of a difference is the tight end position immediately for this team? I mean, it was a non-factor for the most part last year offensively. You know, there were some, you know, Ferkser caught a few big balls at the end of the year. Michael Pruitt had a few touchdowns, but it was really sparse, the production they got out of the tight end last year. How much different does it look from the jump this year? How big of a role will Austin Hooper play? Can you get anything from Chigakonkwo in the receiving game to start things off? Like, that to me is among the most fascinating things, because I think that part of the offense is going to be necessary if the Titans are going to move the ball with any sort of regularity.
I agree. And Ryan Tannehill, look, the protection falling apart last year was, I still think, the biggest external factor in his play. But he's also been really good with the Titans with at least one tight end that he really likes throwing to, and then there was last year. So I think you're going to see instantly Austin Hooper. I mean, he may get three catches for 21 yards Sunday, but I bet you even if that's the case, a couple of them are first downs. You know, I think Austin Hooper is going to be a safety valve for him this year.
Red zone.
And a red zone guy for him this year. And you're going to see Hooper, Swaim, two tight end sets as a steady diet. And then Chig is really interesting because he's a guy who you can scheme something up and get him going vertical if you get the right look and the right matchup. I think he's going to make some plays this year. I think patience is a good idea there, and remembering how long it took Jonnu Smith, who some people thought sucked for a while early in his Titans career. I forget who that was. But, got a little bit of patience. Tight end is – and Chig is a guy who needs probably some more some more weight put on as his career progresses. But I think they are going to find some things for him.
I've got an early over-under for you this week that I'm setting right now here on the fly.
Okay.
Over-under, 23.5 carries for Derrick Henry on Sunday.
That's a good number. I'm going to go – under. And the reason I'm going to go under is that I actually think the Titans are going to handle this game, and I think that they're going to be – see, the problem in the NFL is even if you're up 10 or 13 or something in the fourth quarter, you're still giving him the ball, right? It's not like you're – but I'll go under. I think they'll make a few big plays, and I think there is going to be a little bit of conscious attempting, especially in non-huge games against teams they should beat, to not just batter him.
I'll go over. He ends up at 24.
Okay.
Barely over.
It's a good number. That's a good over-under number.
615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get into a wild week one of college football, including some very interesting results for the Pac-12 as well. That's up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Don't miss the Eddie George Show featuring Jonathan Hutton on 1025-1063 The Game every Monday night at 6 o'clock live from 6th and Peabody. The Eddie George Show is brought to you by Low T Centers. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. What a wild week one of college football, Joe Rex Road. Not a great one for the Pac-12. Georgia absolutely destroys Oregon on Saturday afternoon. They win 49-3. Stetson Bennett, 25 of 31 in that game for 368 yards, two touchdowns. Was not a great game for Bo Nix, who is now the quarterback at Oregon. And I know Georgia obviously has lost a ton off that defense from last year, but they look pretty darn good on Saturday against Oregon. And I said this earlier, and I hope people are starting to come around on this, but like at some point, do you have to look at Stetson Bennett and be like, yeah, he's pretty good. I mean, he just won a national title. He was awesome on Saturday, and everybody keeps talking about, you know, when he's going to be gone and who's going to replace him at quarterback, but Stetson Bennett's pretty darn good out there.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's time to just go ahead and forget about, like, his backstory or what five-star may be next and enjoy him, Georgia fans. I think he's got to be a Heisman candidate this year. Just based on how he played in that game. He just looks to me like he's even better, and he was really good last year. So they look pretty good.
They did.
Between that and this defense, I mean, they've sent so many guys in the NFL from that defense last year, but in the last couple of years, and yeah, they're just reloading. I mean, they are an Alabama level program right now of not just being able to finish the deal, but now just reloading when you lose all these guys in the NFL and being just really well coached and really good.
And Oregon looked disjointed for the most part in that game. And Bo Nix, the second pick that he threw in that game, was just terrible. I mean, it was zone defense. He didn't even look at where he was throwing the ball, and Georgia was just sitting there in the zone. They picked it off. Not a great game from Bo Nix in that game. And then on the other side of things in the Pac-12, Utah going on the road to the Swamp and losing at Florida, 29-26 the final score. They have the two-minute drive. They're driving down the field. They're moving the ball well. They got a chance to score a touchdown and win the game, or maybe at the very worst, kick a field goal to tie it and go to overtime. And then Rising, their quarterback, just throws a brutal interception in the end zone, and they lose on the road. Big win for Florida. Not a great weekend for the Pac-12. I mean, those are your top two programs in the Pac-12, and one loses to Georgia, which you understand, also, although it was a 46-point margin of victory, and the other one loses to an unranked Florida team who, by the way, looked pretty good on Saturday night.
Yeah, Billy Napier, a lot of Florida fans there. Message board genius, great follow. Can we fire Billy Napier? Can we fire him? We missed out on like our third straight recruit. Let's just, we gotta fire him. Just fire him.
Go ahead and move on.
He's a guy who I think a lot of people in the game really respect him. And although I still believe that Dan Mullen got a bit of a raw deal, although I don't think he handled it well. Like, I think Dan Mullen has demonstrated that he's a good football coach. I think he would have been a good hire for Tennessee during that cycle too. I don't like him on TV, so I'd rather him be
a
coach.
He's not good on TV.
But regardless, he got bounced, and some people really don't like him. I feel like Billy Napier is very respected in the game, and I think you kind of saw, if you watched that game Saturday, he just looks like a good coach. I know that's weird to say, but like just even him on the sideline and them and their performance, that was a well-coached team with a guy who I think has a real chance here to be in the first round of the draft in Anthony Richardson. He is the two-point play he made was ridiculous.
Yep.
He's 17 for 24, 168. Then he rushes 11 for 106, three touchdowns, including the 45-yarder where it's just like, I mean, yeah. I'll go to David Ubbin, who threw out Vince Young in his SEC recap. I mean, that's a little heady. A
little strong.
It's a little strong, and he said that. But you know, it's just he glides when he runs. And just big, strong. He was so good. But Cameron Rising was so good too. 7 for 91 on the ground, 22 for 32, 216. And then that pick is just
brutal.
Said this earlier on the show. I'll say it again for all of you Browns fans out there. If you watch that, then it's a different kind of play, but it's the same idea. It's Brian Sipe against the Raiders in the playoffs. Like, all we know, we have a field goal. So the only thing we can't do is turn it over here. Like, you can't come close. You throw into someone who
the seventh row.
You are throwing to someone you know is wide open. He threw to someone who had two defenders between him and his receiver. Like, I don't understand how that play happens.
It's a brutal, brutal decision. And, like, I will say, I was watching that game, and I know, you know, Tennessee's got a huge game against Pittsburgh this week. By the way, we'll have Pat Narduzzi on later this week, a head coach of Pittsburgh, so looking forward to that. And Kentucky plays Florida. So there are big games for both programs before they get there. So I recognize that. But I did watch that game on Saturday and think to myself, man, this Tennessee-Florida game could be pretty interesting.
Bring them on.
Yeah. Well, and Tennessee gets a great look at two huge games coming up.
Yeah, they do.
Although they'll be busy with Pittsburgh. But, Florida, Kentucky. That's one of the top games of college football this week.
Bring them on.
Is it down in the Swamp?
I believe it is.
I think it is.
Oh, boy. Levis better get that mayo in his coffee early.
Listen,
they better wake up quicker than they did last week.
Levis looked good.
Well, what was going on with a tie at Miami of Ohio at the half?
I just focus on the final score, Joe. 37-13. Okay. That's all I care about.
Okay.
They didn't look great. I watched some of that game. Kentucky did not look very good.
Yeah.
first game of the season.
A couple of their starters are out. Okay, so.
First game of the season. But they did not look very good.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean,
maybe John Calipari was in the crowd, like holding up some fathead of, I don't know, some practice facility outline drawing he's got, just showing it at Mark Stoops. Look at this! You see this drawing? Practice facility.
Like, there's got to be some public appearance I have to do together at some point, right? So. Like, at some point.
Game of the weekend, by the way. North Carolina, App State. North Carolina wins 63-61. It's awesome. There's not a defense to be found in that game, although big defensive play at the end. App State scores the touchdown in less than like 30 seconds. They had to drive 60 yards, and they did. They scored a touchdown, and then the two-point conversion, big stop by North Carolina. So a game that featured no defense ends on a good defensive play by the Tar Heels.
Yeah, that one's nutty, and it's an example of do not schedule App State. Don't give them like a 3-for-1 at home, whatever that – like don't go play at their place.
Yeah.
And then NC State should have lost at East Carolina. Both of the ACC schools survived from that state, but, man, Dave Doran calling the timeout, and I was like, this is 100% blown up in his face. But yeah. I guess maybe that was a case of a kicker being actually iced.
The biggest game of the day in terms of hype, Ohio State and Notre Dame. Ohio State wins 21-10 in that game. So a game where, hope you took the under. C.J. Stroud and company, they win. They pull it off at home 21-10. I thought it was a good game. Thought Notre Dame played well, played really well defensively, and held what I think is going to be at some point a high-powered Ohio State offense just to 21 points. But the Ohio State defense looked pretty good as well. So a pretty good season opening game there, but Ohio State too much for Notre Dame in the end.
Yeah, you know, Jackson Smith and Jigba gets hurt, and you can make a bunch of excuses if you want. It's funny because C.J. Stroud's still 24-34, 223, two touchdowns. Yep. That's going to be one of his worst games of the year. Travion Henderson, they're going to be fine. Their defense looks like it may be fixed, although I think Notre Dame is a better defensive team than an offensive team. But I was actually pretty impressed, you know, with Marcus Freeman in that effort. I guess it does turn out, though, that both LSU and Notre Dame have sad opening weekends with their new coaches. And my gosh, what a sad, sad way for LSU to lose.
Well, look, the SEC went 13-1 this week, and LSU, the lone loss last night, and they were pretty much dog water offensively for most of that game, and they got it figured out toward the end. You score what you think is going to be the game-tying touchdown as time expires late in the game, and you line up to kick an extra point, and it gets blocked. Special teams, a pretty big disaster for LSU yesterday.
See, Brian Kelly did a thing. It's a you know, really, really crafty, just like a lot of things he's done since he's taken that job. Mm-hmm. He in his post game, he ripped the coaching, you know, but really he's ripping the players. Like, ripped the coaching for, well, who we picked as punt returner and who we picked on our field goal team. And, you know, so essentially, like, trying to put on the coaches, kind of, but also really just saying the players screwed this game up. I mean, that's a shout out to Caroline Fenton. Today,
it's a tough one.
There will be better days ahead, I'm sure. But right now, people are having a lot of fun. I mean, I saw this morning when I woke up, like just glancing at Twitter, like a good dozen, 12 to 15, like family tweets. I mean, it's just
there's a lot of that.
And
well, there's the meltdown of LSU Twitter that's taking place right now. There's also what continues to be a very underrated Twitter group, which is FSU Twitter, who now thinks that they're back and they're going to compete for the national title this year as well. So Mike Norvell's got things figured out down there, apparently.
I will tell you, I have no doubt. I will tell you, that's a big result for him.
Oh, yeah.
This is a big year. That's a big result. And they were better. They were the better team. I mean, incredible Jaden Daniels drive at the end, and he finally kind of put it all together. But that's a good one. Yeah, pump the brakes, but that's a big deal for him. By the way, Kayshawn Booty apparently has deleted all of his LSU stuff, has unfollowed them. There's no LSU stuff on his page now. What does that mean? You know, we're talking about a meltdown today on this fine labor.
Well, he ran a nice route last night. They're down, I think it was in the second quarter, and they were down by the end zone, and he's just casually running. He cut inside for the slant. The ball hit him in the back of the head. He never turned around and looked for it. And they on the broadcast, I think it was McElroy on the broadcast. I was like, "What was that? What kind of a route was that?" It's just something's going on there.
I mean, Daniels and he were on the sideline talking a lot.
Yeah,
you know, trying to get on the same page. But boy, you don't want that to mean anything other than a guy's really mad. Is he going to hit the portal today?
Hello. 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on college football. A wild week one. Also, give our first look at Tennessee and Pittsburgh coming up this Saturday as well. All that ahead, this is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Labor Day morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking college football, welcoming your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road, you were at Vanderbilt for their game on Saturday. They went 42-31 against Elon. So Vandy moves to 2-0 on the season. It was not perfect in that game, especially as the game went on. Some struggles on the defensive side of the ball. Overall, your takeaway from Vanderbilt, not only their win against Elon, but their start as a whole now at 2-0. Undefeated.
Hey, you take 2-0. You're Vanderbilt, you're 2-0, you take 2-0. And you got a big game coming up, a ranked opponent who I don't know if their starting quarterback, Sam Hartman, will be available. He's out indefinitely, but their backup quarterback looks pretty good, too. Their offense is explosive. It's going to be tough, but you know what? It's Vanderbilt's offense, I think, is going to have a lot of successful Saturdays. Unless they're playing, you know, the top teams on their schedule, I think you're going to see Vanderbilt move the ball. I really like a lot of what I see, starting with Mike Wright. 6 touchdowns, Vanderbilt record, 6 total touchdowns. You know, 2 rushing, 4 passing. Has another long touchdown run. He's fun to watch, and it's going like you would hope. If you're a Vanderbilt fan wondering, you know, can Mike Reich do it? What's the offense going to look like? Is it going to make sense? I think it's built around him. I think he's a fun player to watch. He leads the team. He makes big plays. There are still going to be some moments where, you know, you got to just drop back on 3rd and long and quickly make an accurate throw. That those moments are going to be really key, probably really key Saturday, but that's very encouraging. Defensively, I would not call it encouraging at all based on what happened Saturday. Look, Elon's quarterback got hot. Elon's receivers made some great catches, but there was also some busts, some just bad coverage sights downfield. And I think the most concerning for me in that game is the way Elon moved the Commodores up front in that second half. It gets a 35-10, and then they move the ball both ways. The overall rushing numbers aren't great, but they got too much push up front when you consider who's coming on the schedule. So they are a little banged up there, but that's they gotta figure something out. And that said, you know, Nate Clifton and some of the guys up front had the huge stops late, or else that game gets really interesting.
Yep, and the offense, I am prepared to say, and look, I knew we'd find out a little bit more about Hawaii this week. They're terrible. And it is very clear. They are absolutely terrible. They got destroyed by Vanderbilt, and they just got destroyed by Western Kentucky over the weekend as well. And what'd you say the line was against Michigan, 50.5?
Right now, last I saw, 50.5 on the Hawaii at Michigan primetime Big Ten Network extravaganza Saturday night.
So they are terrible.
What fun that should be.
There's no question about it. So you factor in Vanderbilt played them, they played Elon, and I know the quality of competition is about to jump up pretty dramatically for them. I will say, even knowing that, I feel pretty good about this offense being significantly better this year than it was a year ago. I don't know what that means in terms of their bottom line. Are they going to have a top 5 offense in the SEC? Probably not. But the offense, to me, is significantly better this year than it was last year. Mike Wright obviously has a big part to do with that. I think he's gotten better. His running game is very important. Jaden McGowan, 4 catches, 118 yards on Saturday, including a 75-yard bomb on that play. And I feel like Will Shepard, even though he's had 4 touchdowns so far, he really hasn't been overly dynamic yet. But we know he's a pretty darn good football player, and I think that's going to come as the season goes on. So I feel pretty good about Vanderbilt's offense thus far based on what I've seen.
Yeah, and Ray Davis makes a huge difference, yep. And he's the guy. But they had Chase Gillespie, freshman, behind him, and he barely got any work Saturday. So I think there's a good chance to get Rocco Griffin back for this game against Wake Forest, which would be good to have another back in there. And if they get Quincy Skinner back at receiver, now they have a more complete situation. I like their offense. You know, yeah, top 5 in the SEC. Look, when they play Bama and Georgia,
it's going to be tough to move
ball. It may not look great. But I think most of the other teams on their schedule, they got a chance to at least be competitive on that side of the ball. I much less optimistic on the other side of the ball.
So Vanderbilt will take on Wake Forest coming up this weekend. And interested to see what happens at quarterback there. Is Sam Hartman going to play? Is it going to be Mitch Griffiths? By the way, Mitch Griffiths looked pretty good in game one for Wake Forest. So we'll see what happens on that front. Right now, Wake Forest, a 7.5-point favorite on the FanDuel Sportsbook against Vanderbilt. Also a big game coming up for the Vols on Saturday. They'll take on Pittsburgh. We'll have a lot to get to on that game later this week. Pat Narduzzi will be joining the show, head coach at Pittsburgh as well. So looking forward to that. But, Joe, your initial thoughts on this matchup. I looked at FanDuel last break. Tennessee's a 6.5-point favorite on the road taking on Pittsburgh. I'm a little surprised by that based on Pittsburgh being a, you know, top 20 team and the game's at Pittsburgh. It's interesting to me.
And so it opened at 4.5?
Yeah.
It's moved 2 points
already?
It's
moved
already? 2 points. Oh, easy Vols fans. Oh, boy. Easy Vols fans. All the money's going on Tennessee. Look, I know some people who cover college football who think Tennessee is going to go put a thumping on that Pittsburgh team.
They might.
I mean, their offense.
I'd be surprised.
I think their offense is going to have a good day Saturday. Is their defense going to have a good day? I don't know about that. Keaton Slovis, good receivers, good backs. I think we're looking at another wild game, probably like last year's. So, like, I have thought Tennessee was going to go win this game. I still do. But easy.
You taking -6.5?
Easy now. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Keep it going.
Yes, but I also kind of – I feel like I see like 38-34 in my mind. Yeah. It's tough. I don't think this is some waxing that some people think it's going to be. If it is, it bodes very well for Tennessee moving forward.
Look, it's hard not to feel good about the offense right now. You know, dating back to last year, they've scored – 45 or more in four consecutive games. So, I mean, the offense you feel good about. Honestly, the one thing that I still wonder about with the offense that I don't know how good of a look we got at it on Saturday or on Thursday against Ball State was, and the offensive line looked great, but it was Ball State. How's the offensive line going to hold up against Pittsburgh? That to me is still an interesting question heading into this game.
Yeah, right. They are. That's the one thing on the offense that you're still like, okay, here's a prove it Saturday. You know, I mean, Mincy's looked pretty clearly the left tackle. They let Crawford, you know, play some, but interior, you know, the interior of that line, Kalijah Kancey is a great player for Pittsburgh in the interior. They always, I mean, Narduzzi is going to be, they're going to be aggressive. I just don't see them changing from what they are. They're going to be aggressive. They're going to try to hit Hendon Hooker as many times as they can hit him. And he's going to have opportunities to – they are going to be in that quarters defense they play, which is a lot like just playing a lot of man, and there are going to be some deep shots taken. And we know that last year deep shots were taken and
they were
not landed, although one of them was perfectly thrown. By the way, people forget that one. But
there was a lot to choose from.
There were a lot to choose from. Hooker is going to have a chance to make big plays. But, I mean, this is a game where you also have to think long-term and be like, got to protect that guy. Because that's what Narduzzi's defenses do. They are like, we will give up some shots to take shots at your QB.
Well, and it's also the first set of a toss-up game of if Tennessee's going to have the sort of year that some think they're going to have, and that's flirting with 9-10 wins, this is a game you're going to have to win against Pittsburgh.
Got to have it.
No question about it. 615-737-1025. We'll get back into the Titans coming up next. Where should Mike Vrabel rank? How should he be viewed in the coaching pantheon around the NFL heading into this year? We'll get to that and more next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.